Before the initiation begins, the subjects are studied. Even their dreams are recorded. Before the initiation begins, the testing areas are selected. The sorority house, the sanitarium, the empty shopping mall. And just before the initiation begins, a toast is required.
To be young, staying young, and dying young.
The initiation.
Delta Rho Chi, be with you.
A fraternal tradition for over 100 years.
The Delta Rho Chi.
Created for only one purpose.
Pleasant dreams.
Ceremony that will never die, as long as new blood is pledged.
Hey, y'all, and welcome back to another episode of the Cult Cinema Circle podcast. My name is Jesse, and I'll be your host. Now, on today's episode, we're going to be covering and talking about a little film from 1984. It's in the horror genre, and I think it's a little bit underrated and underseen, so that's why I want to talk about it today. We're talking 1984's The Initiation. Now, you may have heard of this movie back if you listened to the sorority horror episode I did back in January, and I talked about how I liked this movie and how I would do a single episode on it. But oh, don't worry. I'm not doing this alone today. I'm doing this with the same person who I did that sorority horror episode with and a multitude of other episodes on my podcast because he's just a fun guy to talk to. But please welcome back to the show, Pickens Behringer. Hey, Pickens, how are you?
Hello, Jesse. I am wonderful. I'm hungover and I am happy to be here.
I love that. Did you at least like enjoy your night after that, I guess?
I did hook up with a bartender. So yeah, I would say, you know, on the scale of nights, it was about a solid 9 out of 10. And
I like that for you. You know, you keep me young, Pickens. I just like that you're a slut and it's fun. I mean that in the best way possible, really.
Oh, no judgment. Slut is the ultimate phrase of expression of grit. But you know what I'm trying to say. Yes.
Sure. Yes. Let's go with that. Also, the gays, you know, plus you and your boyfriend are like super cute. So, I mean, shit, if it works for you. Whatever, it's all good here. Today, though, we're talking about The Initiation. Now, my history with this movie is pretty straight standard because it literally came from doing the show with you. Because you literally, when you came on for Sorority Babes and the Slimeball Bolarama, you didn't really care for that movie, and I really didn't care for it either. But you said, well, you know, if you want a movie that's actually kind of good, go watch The Initiation instead. And I was like, okay, well, let me check this out. And then I checked it out and I really liked it. So I guess for me, at least, and that's literally my history with it. Let me know a little bit from you, though, Pickens. Like, when did you first like find this movie? And I think I also want to know, like, what kind of draws you to it and makes you interested in it where, you know, you'd want to come on and talk about it.
Yeah. So I stumbled upon it like kind of randomly, actually. It was during that golden age of YouTube, like right before Google like acquired it, right before Google acquired it, where you could actually watch like pirated movies. Like, you know, you would have to watch it like in 10-minute segments. And I know that there was like this channel that like had uploaded like a whole bunch of slasher movies because I was like super into them. And I know, like, that's how I watched Slumber Party Massacre for the first time, and The Prowler. And then, so The Initiation was on there, and I was like, I'll watch it. And I just really dug it. I thought it was super cool. I really liked the cinematography. And I'm a little bit, I like movies that take places in malls. Like, that's really fun to me. Like, Dawn of the Dead, and this one, and Chopping Mall, obviously, the best. So, I just saw it randomly and it just became like one of those hidden gems for me.
Yeah, I mean, that's totally fair. Along with Mall Horror, have you watched the movie, what is it, Phantom of the Mall, Eric's Revenge? Have you seen that movie before?
I actually have not, but it's on my never-ending list. You know, I'm always like, I'm going to watch it. But yeah, I've been really wanting to see it. It looks cool.
Yeah, it is kind of fun. So it's funny because it sounds like it's a sequel. It's not. And it has, it has Morgan Fairchild's in it. And also Pauly Shore in one of his first roles as well. He's also in there. I forget who the main guy is. Oh, he was in that movie Popcorn. You remember Popcorn from the 90s? Oh,
yes, yes, yes.
He's in that movie too.
Someone who loved that movie so much. And
I also love
actually,
that movie.
A few years ago, Carolina Theater, I'm plugging that. If you're ever in North Carolina, come to the Carolina Theater. They did a screening of it and the lead actress came and did like a Q&A after. And it was really awesome.
Oh, Jill Schoenlein. I love that. Oh, my God. I mean, but that's my history with it. I love that's your history with it. Super fun. Yeah, I do love Chopping Mall as well. I think it's a great little film. But yeah, this is like an interesting one. And I mean, really, like, I think what I like about it, too, is just like I like that it gets in and out, too. It's like 90 minutes. Generally, it's good. But also, like, I don't know. It's a we'll talk about what we think maybe doesn't work, maybe, because there's some little things here and there. But like overall, I still think it's a fun time and I'm glad to talk about it. And again, like I said in my intro, you know, I think it's underseen. I don't think a bunch of people know about it. So I want more people to see it. And again, we'll kind of talk all about that. But as we normally do on this show, I'm going to talk a little bit about, you know, production figures, all that fun stuff we can kind of talk about. But this movie is actually celebrating 40 years this month as you're hearing this. It'll be in April. So it came out April 6th of 1984. It's about 97 minutes and it was distributed by New World Pictures. Our buddies over there at New World Pictures will probably end up talking about a little bit like we have before. I could not find any budget information on this movie. I mean, I would say the budget probably wasn't really held that high, to be honest. But
no, it's probably definitely on the lower end for sure. Right. But they do a good job making it look expensive, though. I will say that.
I think so, too. Absolutely. And also, I could find no real box office information of this, most likely because it never came out in theaters. Probably. I don't even know. Like, maybe it was just a home video release because we did talk about that before that. And again, if it did ever have a theatrical release, I don't know nothing about it in terms of numbers. So there you go. I will say, though, that this movie has zero on Rotten Tomatoes from critics, which again tells me that nobody has covered it. Nobody's reviewed it.
And also, like, it's not necessarily the movie's fault. It was like 1984 when it came out. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely like I'm sure the critics at the time were definitely over the slasher movie. I'm sure they were. It could have been like the greatest movie of all time. And they still, if it was a slasher movie, they were going to give it 0 stars.
Yeah, it's that. And also, I think there's only like 3 reviews on there. And I don't think that's enough to even get a rating on Rotten Tomatoes. This is an aggregate. So like, yeah, that's why it is. And rudely enough, the audience score is a 33%. These people don't have taste.
Zero. I'm just saying. Zero taste. God.
Zero taste.
God. You're saying the obscure slasher movie about sorority girls breaking into a mall, you guys don't like that? God, get your shit together, Carol.
Get your shit together. Oh my God, Linda. Anyway, I have an Aunt Linda. She's awesome, but like, you know, whatever. And then a 2.9 out of 5 on Letterboxd. Again, but I do think there are people who do like this movie, and like you and me, and other people as well that aren't you and me. So it's all good. And you know what? You're listening to this episode for that very reason. So there's a bit of an interesting kind of thing going on with this movie, because this was actually a dual directing thing. So this was directed by Larry Stewart, who's really only known for this movie, but it was also partly directed by Peter Crane as well. Now, you can sort of tell that, though, because Peter Crane, the way he directed, I think, was a little bit more like cinematic, and you know, he kind of came from, you know, doing films more so, whereas Larry Stewart did a lot more television. So that's why this movie feels sort of like this 80s TV movie at times.
It really does, especially like it definitely has like an A plot, B plot. It does feel like a more like a television movie kind of thing with like gore and nudity in it, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I really don't know much about Mr. Peter Crane, but I didn't really find much about him. But yeah, so, but it was credited to Larry Stewart, which really this is the only movie he ever even directed. Apparently he was maybe in a few movies back in the day. But again, I think he was more of a television director, it seems like. And then the writer of this movie is Charles Pratt Jr. The only thing I know about him is apparently he executive produced Cruel Intentions 2, the one that does
Amy
not have
Amy Adams. Yes. Oh my God.
Did it have Jonathan O'Keefe in it too?
I think so. It's been so long. I remember like I bought like all of them, like Cruel Intentions 1, 2. And isn't there a third one? I think
there probably is.
Yeah, I binge watched all of them, and then I binge watched all of Wild Things like in this weekend, and it was like a lot.
That sounds really fun, actually, kind of sort of. Not because of the Cruel Intentions sequels, but mostly because of Wild Things, honestly.
I love Wild Things. I just love it so much.
It's so good. Oh my God. I need to get that on Blu-ray. It'll happen. Don't worry.
You need to see Kevin Bacon's Bacon in HD. It's just, it's beautiful.
Mwah. Oh, hell yeah. Oh, hell yeah. So excited. But yeah, so that was him who did that. Also, a fun little thing. I know you must like Cruel Intentions. Have you seen like Dangerous Liaisons with like
Uma
Thurman,
yes,
and all them?
When I found out that Cruel Intentions was essentially like a remake or like a reimagining
adaptation
of it,
yeah.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I want to watch this. And Glenn Close is just, okay, at the Academy, because the Oscars are, I guess at this point, will have already happened.
When we're recording, they're tomorrow.
Yes, they are tomorrow. Why has Glenn Close not gotten an Oscar? Same with Toni Collette.
I don't understand that, because literally fucking, okay, have you seen the movie In and Out with Kevin Kline in it?
Oh my God, like it's been years, but yeah.
But she's in it. She's like presenting an award. How has she not won one before? This is bullshit.
It is complete and utter bullshit. Like, even if it's like an honorary award, just give her something. God almighty.
No. I know. She was just so good. Oh my gosh. She is so good in that movie too. Side note, because this is what we do on our show sometimes. So, okay. Who do you think for tomorrow? Because I have not watched all the Oscar movies. Who do you think is going to win? I want to know some maybe your predictions if you have.
I'm feeling like, okay, so my dream of dreams, if Barbie just sweeps everything and wins everything, okay, but that's not realistic. It's not going to happen. I'm leaning towards Oppenheimer. I think that's going to win. Was it a good movie? Yeah, but I don't know. I have a feeling they're just going to throw it all to Christopher Nolan. He's going to win, and I don't know. I don't know why I'm feeling that way, but
yeah, that's fair. I do believe that Oppenheimer will probably win, honestly. I kind of want Divine Joy Randolph to win. Like, I kind of want her for the holdovers. I do want to watch the holdovers as well.
Oh, I want to see it too. I've heard that's the one movie I've heard nothing but good things about. Like, every single person that's seen it says, this is, like, super good. Actually, either Paul Giamatti is definitely going to win best act. He might be, it's either between him and Cillian Murphy, I think. But
yes, Paul Giamatti, I do think will probably win, which I'm totally fine with. I'm very happy with that. And yeah, I don't know. I will have to see. Yeah, I don't know. Be on the lookout for an Alexander Payne movie coming on the podcast soon, because it's celebrating 25 years and it's going to be a fun conversation. But yeah, so anyway, we'll see how the Oscars go tomorrow. And then in the future, we'll see how, you know, maybe we predicted the future. Who knows? Back to our movie. We have two composers in this movie. We have Gabriel Black and also Lance Ong. They're really only known for this movie. I don't think the
score. It took two people to write the music in this movie.
Oh my God. Like, that's so amazing. Although I will say, I do think that the score of this movie, or like the music of the movie, obviously, you know, it's It's this it's cheesy no house 80s on
sorority
movie.
Row, but it's fine.
Yeah, no, it's and that's what kind of makes me like interested in it, to be perfectly honest. But you know, that's just me. And then also our cinematographer is George Turrell. The only thing I know he did is a movie called Steel Dawn, and then also a movie called Left Behind the Movie. And Left Behind the Movie is a Kirk Cameron movie.
Oh, honey. That was growing up evangelical Christian. Yes, I am very familiar with the Left Behind series.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, God. I'm glad you got out of that. Truly unscathed. Oh, hopefully a little unscathed. You might be a little scathed.
You know what? Compared to most, pretty unscathed, actually. Like, I was just kind of like, I got to a point. I was just like, good for you. Not for me. I'm going to go suck dicks.
Exactly. There you go. Love that. But you know who probably also maybe sucks dicks, but we're okay with that, is our girl called Daphne Zuniga in this movie. I mean, listen.
Oh, gosh. I love her. She's just... she is. Why do I... Miss Melrose Place.
Yes, mm-hmm. She was on Melrose Place. She was also in Spaceballs, for those who like that movie. Why do I feel like Daphne Zuniga would also fit being on The Housewives? I just feel like...
Oh, she... You know why? Because she kind of looks like Lisa Vanderpump a little bit.
Like a little bit. Just a little bit. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Her IMDb picture, if you look at her IMDb picture from like afar, she does kind of give some Lisa Vanderpumpness.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So maybe that's why it is. But maybe she's just like doesn't want to be in that. And I totally understand it. I don't even know if she's married or not. She probably is. But
I mean, you don't necessarily need to be married to be a housewife. You know? Yeah.
Which I just think is so funny. But, you know, OK, fine.
But we already have Kyle Richards. We already have the horror icon, you know, in The Housewives. We don't need to.
That's very true. And it also, like, this movie does feel like a weird soap opera. So it kind of makes sense that she would then go on to be in a weird soap opera in the 90s. I appreciate that. That's what we call poetic justice.
It is very soap opera-y. Especially, yeah. It is very soap opera-y. You're right. Oh, my God. I never thought of that.
It like a little bit is just a tiny bit, but you know, it's fine. Then we got to talk about a little bit about the mother of this movie, who came from another movie about mothers, Psycho 1 and Psycho 2, Miss Vera Miles. We got to talk a little bit about her. You know, I mean, I like really enjoy Psycho and Psycho 2 as well. And I think she does a pretty good job. Did she do anything else like in the horror sphere? We could also talk a little bit about her being in this movie, because that was the whole thing. But yeah, what did you think of her?
I really like her. Like, yeah, like Psycho is in my top three Hitchcocks for sure. To my knowledge, I mean, I think she did some thrillers to my knowledge, but like, kind of like that. But I thought she, you know, like in Psycho 2 actually really surprised me. I remember I went in being like, oh, this is going to be awful. Like, oh, right. It's going to be so bad. And I was like, oh, actually, this is actually really like a genuinely good sequel. Super low expectations, was pleasantly surprised.
Yes.
I think she definitely did this movie for a paycheck. I'm happy she was there. It kind of gave the movie a little like star quality.
No, totally. I can definitely agree with you on that. We'll just mention it now. So I think she did not want to do this movie after Peter Crane got fired. Apparently they only were able. So for him being there, I think they only got 3 days worth of footage out of him being there 10 days. So that's not great. But he's a perfectionist. He really wanted it to be good. And I think that's the only reason that Vera Miles was there. And because she had already signed the contract, she had to complete her duties. But yeah, I don't think she wanted to be in this movie after that, to be honest. But it is what it is.
Indeed. But, you know, I'm glad she's there. And, you know, it's a fun time. It's a fun time for sure.
Agreed. And then we also got to talk about the king, rest in power, my dude, Clu Gulager, as Mr. Fairchild, I guess, in this film.
Daddy.
He is Daddy, because you do see him like having simulated sex in the beginning. And I'm just like, listen. But he has recently passed away and it's very, very sad. Of course, some people are probably like, who? But then I'm like, the dad from Nightmare on Elm Street 2 and the guy from Return to the Living Dead and like all of this stuff. Like,
clearly, like, amazing. Are you guys sleeping under a rock? Gosh.
Yeah, no. Oh my god, love him. We'll also talk about Return to the Living Dead in this movie too, because I have thoughts. It's all good.
Yeah.
Anyway, we have James Reed. He plays Peter, who I think is one of the frat guys who ends up getting killed in this movie. But I put in my notes already, but you know where he's from, right?
Oh, yes. He is from... from Legally Blonde. Her dad. Yes.
Her dad.
From
yes.
Legally Blonde. Yes.
Yes. The guy from Legally Blonde. Yes. He's the dad of Elle Woods, who says,
Harvard's yes. just boring and serious, and you, Pumpkin, are none of those things.
Exactly. I love him. Yes. He's also not another teen movie. If you've ever seen that movie, when Preston's going to have the party or whatever, or Prescott is going to have the party, he's Prescott's dad or whoever. So, like, you see this whole tracking shot with him and the mom, and it's this guy. So I just think that's very funny.
If y'all have not watched Not Another Teen Movie, you need to, because, I mean, if you didn't already think Chris Evans is super hot, this movie will just reinforce that or make you just, oh my God, the whipped cream, mama.
Yeah, it's very, very reverent and it's really stupid, but I unabashedly kind of enjoy it, like, honestly, like, and yeah. I also think the castings in it are really fun. Like, I love that Lacey Chabert is like Jennifer Love Hewitt's character and they were literally on a TV show together. So, like, I just think that's very funny. And, like, the little brother from Bring It On plays like the gym, whatever the fuck his name's character from American Pie. I just think there are some fun little casting things in here. Like, Jamie Presley's there. Like, really? Like, what the, how could you not stand?
I consider it like one of the last good like parody movies of that time period.
I agree. And that's something being said, because I feel like this and Scary Movie are pretty much the same. I don't see them that different from one another. I don't think one is better than the other or anything. But as parody goes, it goes downhill after this. So, but some people think that the Not Another Teen Movie is that, which I'm just like, yeah, but have you seen another gay movie? Like, girl,
have you seen any of the other movies, like Epic Movie and
Disaster Movie?
Disaster Movie, which, oh my God, the pun, right? It writes that joke, writes itself.
I can't. Anyway. And then one of our last people we have is Chris Bradley. He plays Chad, another one of the guys that dies. He's had a fun little kind of career. He, I think, mostly would be known for Waxwork. Have you seen Waxwork before?
I haven't. I've seen the poster so many times, but I've never actually watched it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's him. You know, he's there. Then we also have like Marilyn Kagan, who plays Marsha, who we love Marsha, of course. She didn't have much of an acting career, but we'll talk a little bit about her. But, you know, she's in here. Hunter Tylo is another one who plays Allison. She didn't have much of like a big film career, but she's actually more of a soap star. She's gone on to do soap operas.
And I found out this fun little tidbit about her. She actually was apparently going to be on Melrose Place also.
Oh.
But they fired her because she was pregnant and she sued ABC and Aaron Spelling's production company, and I think she won or they settled out of court, but yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. It makes sense for her to be on to Melrose Place for sure. That just tracks for me. But, and also, this is the same person who literally when she was younger just looked like Nancy Allen. She just looks like her. I don't know how to explain it, but she just does.
It is insane how it is. It's crazy how much she looks like her.
Like, seriously. And I hate saying that because I'm like, you know, oh, well, blah, blah, blah. But I was like, no, when she was younger, she really did look like her. I just don't know how to explain it. Like, it just is. Okay. Just deal with it. You know, I also love Heidi in this movie too. I think she's serving looks, but she only ever did this movie. So good for her. But yeah, so that's a little bit about our cast. Again, a lot of these people, I think, were like first timers, this is introducing Daphne Zuniga. So this is like her first movie she ever did. So, you know, I just think that's always very fun. And as we stated already, like this was so a little bit about the film. So it was shot in Dallas, Texas, which is interesting because you don't get a whole lot of things actually shot in Texas. So it's always nice to kind of see that.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Richard Linklater stuff. So like Days of Confused and Slacker and all that. I think we're also shot in Texas, all that kind of thing. But, you know, yeah, it initially had Peter Crane at the helm. Peter Crane is actually British. I mean, he did a couple things. Like he did a movie called Hunted, Assassin, and also this movie called Moments. He also did some early to late, I think late 70s, like TV shows and stuff. So he did do some of that, which was cool. But again, he got fired and then Larry Stewart took over. And so the Dallas Market Center, which is a like wholesale trade center, pretty much like a big fucking mall, whatever the fuck this thing is, pretty much is what they used for this. And then also Southern Methodist University is the primary shooting location for the university scenes. So I think this mall might still be around. I don't think it has necessarily. Oh, this was actually, do you know a fun little thing about this mall?
No, but I know it's like it's like 5 stories high, and that this movie convinces us that they only need 1 security guard.
Yes, but I just found this out from Wikipedia. This center, so this big mall, was the destination of one John F. Kennedy when he was on his way to there, and then something happened.
Oh, dear. Oh, wow.
Yeah. So they were literally on their way to this place, this big, like, trade center place, and then a little thing happened, so that sucks. Yeah, not to laugh, but that's true. All right then. Yeah, he was going to give a speech to 2,600 people at this sold out luncheon in the Grand Courtyard, and that is what happened with that. But it's still around, you know. I guess it's like a big ass, like, I think there's like a public transit stop there. There's a place called Trademark. There's a couple different things. I wonder if a Trademark you can get trade.
I'm gonna go find out, you know, go see.
I guess so. But yeah, so the Initiation was given a regional staggered release by New World Pictures. Because, listen, New World Pictures made some cool movies, and that's great. I don't know how good they were at business, because they folded, like, multiple times before they actually really folded. Like, they were always on the cusp, in a way. It is what it is. You know, fine.
Yeah, you know, I'm sure they had fun along the way. They made some duds. Yeah. They made some hot hits, you know.
Yeah. Totally. But yeah, so a little bit about the development of the movie. So screenwriter Charles Pratt Jr., he wrote the script after being asked to produce a low budget horror movie for the executive producers Jock Gaynor and Bruce Lansbury, and the producer Scott Winart for New World Pictures. While writing the screenplay, Pratt deliberately incorporated soap opera elements into the subplots involving the Fairchild's family history, as he was inspired by the genre at the time. There you go.
It tracks. I mean, with the twist ending and the kind of melodrama of family, it definitely is like a little. Yes. Okay. So we weren't crazy for thinking that.
We were not crazy for thinking this. Like, yeah. And according to Pratt, he initially cobbled together the concept of the sorority initiation pledge taking place within a department store, but the concept had to be reworked when they weren't able to find a suitable location to shoot this at. So Daphne Zuniga was actually cast.
Find a Macy's or a JCPenney?
I guess not. Like, they couldn't find that. They just had to find this big ass like trade center. So, okay. Daphne Zuniga had been cast in this role following her minor role in The Dorm That Dripped Blood. So again, they gave her the introducing kind of like credit. And she was actually a student at UCLA at the time being cast. She has said, quote, "It was a great part. I got to play twins." We'll get to that. "A good sister and an evil sister." spoiler alert, it's fine. I got shot in the back one on screen. It was a pretty heavy for a first role. And the majority of the supporting actors were just local people from the Dallas-Fort Worth area, including Hunter Tylo and Joy Jones, Allison and Heidi, respectively, who are both going to Brookhaven College. And Vera Miles, as we stated already, who is known for being Lila Crane, was cast as the mother of Zuniga's character. However, she was not impressed by the screenplay. She agreed to be in this after having Peter Crane's support, but he got fired and she was not exactly happy with this.
And
so the initiation
shows.
It does show. This was filmed on location in Fort Worth in Dallas, Texas, over an approximately 30-day period in the summer of 1983. This commenced with director Crane at the helm of this. After several days of shooting, though, the schedule had already fallen behind, leading to Crane being fired and replaced with Larry Stewart, who did the rest of the film. The difference in technique and style between the two directors account for slight aesthetic differences in some of the sequences. According to the writer, Charles Pratt Jr., Crane was employing more experimental like camera techniques, like close-ups and point-of-view shots. So maybe that's a lot of what we get from that. Whereas Stewart, who is primarily a TV director, as I said, used a lot more of a like conventional style akin to that medium. And many of the early point of view shots that were in this, as well as like the sequences set in the psychiatric hospital in the beginning, are all done by Crane.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, knowing that and piece of trivia and then rewatching the movie, it just makes sense, because like you are like, oh wow, this is really cool, and then you notice at some point like those kind of like weird camera angles and the POV stuff, it just kind of just stops.
Yes.
And I think that's when it kind of that's my one complaint of the movie, is that the middle section is especially boring. And I think it's also because it's a lot of just cut, you know, like shoulder medium shot, you know, all that, just it's just not that, really that interesting.
Yeah, I agree for sure. The multi-level World Trade Center building of the Dallas Market Center, as I stated, is where the Fairchild Department Store is. And the crew shot during evenings while the building was closed. Southern Methodist University used for the campus, while the Dream Labs sequences were shot in an abandoned Holiday Inn hotel, where the production design had refitted a maid's closet to appear as the laboratory. So that's kind of fun.
They had an empty hotel and they couldn't just, you know, have him own a hotel instead. That could have been the initiation.
I know, right? Like that very well could have been. Like that would have been also interesting. But so the initiation first screened in the U.S. in the spring of 1984 with showings in Lexington, Kentucky, Philadelphia, and it also apparently opened in Silver Spring, Maryland. That's fun. That not really near me, that's more south, but okay. In some Midwestern cities, such as Bloomington, Illinois, it was paired as a drive-in double feature with the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which kind of is funny because they were both shot in Texas. It was also released several months later in Baltimore, hey, and the Los Angeles Times reported a tentative autumn release of this film in LA and in several southern states. So southern U.S. cities like Shreveport, Pensacola, and Jackson. This opened in December of 1984. And this film was largely overshadowed by, you want to take a guess at what it was overshadowed by?
Let's see, 1984. So I'm assuming a little film called Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah. So it was definitely, and it also, this came out.
Also, Dreams with Dreams. That, yes. They just really, poor initiation.
Poor initiation. It screened sporadically throughout the country, doing like 1 or 2 week runs, and it was passed the MPAA, you know, but the British Board of Film Classification, so the BBFC, cut nearly a minute of gore, specifically from Hunter Tylo's murder scene that happens. So the critical response and legacy of this film. So Joe Baltake of Philadelphia Daily News wrote that the film was, quote, convoluted, contemporary, and evil. This is a Freudian slip of a horror film, far more complex than truly terrifying. It is a little convoluted, I will give him that. But Rick Lyman of the Philadelphia Inquirer likened the film to its contemporary, quote, sorority girl slasher films. There you go. Concluding, all of this is tied up in a surprise denouement that's about as surprising as, well, a knock-knock joke. The Baltimore Evening Sun's Lou Cedrone wrote that the film was, quote, not so gory as most of the slice and dice genre, comparing it to Friday the 13th and Sleepaway Camp, but added, quote, the initiation may be a little better than similar features, if only because it is less bloody. In a subsequent review, this critic also stated they characterized this as a Friday the 13th clone and added, quote, Vera Miles and Clu Gulager are performers caught in this hapless mess. And then Candace Russell of the South Florida Sun Sentinel gave this film 1.5 out of 4 stars, referring to it as an uncomfortable pastiche of scenes we've never seen before, and likened elements of it to Brian De Palma's Sisters from 1973. Do you have anything to say about those people who said something about it?
Every time I read like a negative review from people from the 80s, I'm just like, did we watch the same movie? Like, what? Wait, were people just too smart back then? I just like, I'm like, it's a dumb slasher movie. And y'all are like,
I know.
It's evil? What?
I know. You're just like, oh, okay. Like, fine. Following the first DVD release in 2002, Film Threat gave it an unfavorable.
Terrible cover art. I hate
it. Just saying.
Cover art.
This had an unfavorable review from Film Threat, writing, quote, the initiation is the latest forgotten horror film to receive the Anchor Bay DVD treatment, and I'd be at loss to tell you why. Film School Rejects, however, said the film, quote, had the hallmarks of being an awful movie without being an awful movie. It's fun, and that should count for something. There you go. I like that. Eric Snyder, writing for film.com in 2012, gave the film a negative review, calling it, quote, a bad movie with bad ideas that are badly executed. While TV Guide summarized the film as boring slasher stuff, noting that top-billed Vera Miles and Clu Gulager barely appear in the film, which would be a terrifically dreadful double bill with the similar the dorm that dripped blood, also featuring Zuniga. Brian Collins, who was writing for the Alamo Drafthouse Film Journal, Birth, Movies, Death, noted that the film may be worth a look for slasher aficionados. It's far from a perfect film, but there are some unusual elements to it that give it enough personality to overcome its somewhat sluggish pace and TV movie-esque production. And Dread Central's Anthony Arrigo observed in 2016's in a review he did, he said, quote, a surprising amount of character depth on display here, more so than similar pictures of the era. And then finally, in Legacy of Blood, a comprehensive guide to slasher movie, Jim Harper, who is the writer, called the film, quote, a lackluster effort that never quite lives up to the abilities of its cast, further noting, even with the soap opera ending, the film isn't entirely successful, mostly because of the terrible script. There's a wealth of unnecessary jargon and cheap dialogue, not to mention some notable inconsistencies. Zuniga does her best to rise above the bad material and turns in a great performance, but Gulager and Miles sleepwalk through their parts. Horror film scholar Adam Rakoff alternately notes in his book, Going to Pieces, The Rise and Fall of the Slasher Film, that, quote, despite its proclivity for laughable dialogue and silly plot twists, The Initiation manages to be a fairly entertaining and occasionally frightening movie. And because of this, it has been able to gain this kind of cult following. And Adam Rakoff, I will side with you on this because I agree. Like, same. You know,
I totally agree.
Yeah, I will never claim that this movie is like super, super good. However, I think if you want kind of a dumb slasher, like this is definitely kind of up that alley. So I
absolutely, you know. It's a deep cut. It's, you know, it's if you want to go a little deeper, see one that you maybe haven't seen before. It's a fun watch. It's a fun watch.
I agree. So we've gone over, you know, some of the cast, the crew, and some of the production of the movie, but let's go a little bit into this. We already had some spoilers anyway, but we're going to go a little bit different in this, okay? So let's dig into a little bit of this this little plot. So, Pickens, I guess if you had to explain to somebody like what this movie is about, like if you wanted to do an elevator pitch of the movie, how would you tell somebody what the initiation is about?
Picture it. Sorority, titties. But there's a convoluted family history, but there's also a study about dreams and what do they actually mean. But it's also a mall movie, but it's also a slasher movie, but there's also a twist ending.
There you go. I mean, that's fine. That works. Like, absolutely. Picture it. Like, it's all good. Yeah, I guess if I had to explain this, yeah, so this movie is about a young lady named Kelly Fairchild. First off, what a name. I love
great
that name.
Great name.
So good. So Kelly has gone through some trauma in her life. I guess she experienced seeing a man be burned when she was a kid. And this has
and
left
also
her with
seeing what we think are her parents fucking.
Yes, exactly. So this has left her with some trauma. Anyway, so she ends up going to college.
Trauma.
Yes. Yes. Rushing a sorority, Delta Rho Chi, who again
never will die.
There you go. But yeah, so she goes to the sorority and but she's having these reoccurring nightmares pretty much. And they are also in their hell week, as we may have talked about on the previous show about sorority horror. Hell week is kind of the closing of it's like the closing part of like the rush process where they decide whether they want you in the sorority or not, I guess. And normally this has to do with like a prank you have to pull or something like this, at least the logic that this movie is telling us.
Essentially, it's basically hazing, but okay, it is convoluted. The whole yeah. premise is just, as much as I love the fact it takes place in the mall and I love the mall atmosphere that they're in,
right,
it did not need to be in this movie.
I know, it is very odd where I'm just like, why did it have to be in a mall? But the reason it's in a mall, which we'll get to. So like, yeah, so this movie was pretty much
she's
like
a Fairchild. That's
she's why. A Fairchild. Yes. Pretty much like she goes to college and all this is happening, right? In the meantime, there's also like some killer that is like on the loose that escapes from a sanatorium and is now killing people. And so that's also happening in the background of this film. But yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. Let's go into, again, we're going back to Wikipedia and we'll get a little bit of our plot from there. And then we can kind of talk a little bit about what we thought of just some of the scenes and all this. So here's my dramatic reading. Since childhood, college student Kelly Fairchild, played by Daphne Zuniga, has suffered from a reoccurring nightmare in which a strange man is burned alive in her childhood home. The nightmare began when she suffered amnesia after sustaining a head injury at 9. Apparently, she fell out of a tree. So, hoping to unravel the nightmare's meaning, she pitches a term project to Peter. Okay, so that's Peter. Got it. So, that is the dad from Legally Blonde, the graduate assistant in her psychology seminar about it. Also, by the way, he is getting a degree in parapsychology. Bitch, where? That's a pseudoscience.
It's just, Also, he's just such a useless character. Because does he kind of disappear once the mall stuff happens? Like,
he kind of does, to be honest with you. It's like, very weird.
Vera Mills comes and like, We're getting ahead.
We're getting ahead of ourselves. Anyway, so Peter agrees to perform a sleep study on Kelly, but her mother, Frances, played by Vera Miles, subsequently forbids it. Meanwhile, at a psychiatric hospital miles away, several patients escape and a nurse is murdered. Frances is notified of this incident by phone and she informs Kelly's father, Dwight, played by Clue Gulager. Kelly is preparing to partake in this sorority's initiation ritual, which entails her and a group of other pledges breaking into the multi-level department store of her father, Fairchild's, after hours and stealing the night porter's or the night watchman's uniform. Kelly, her best friend Marcia,
skivvies.
Exactly, yes. And then roommates Allison and Beth. Hunter Tylo plays Allison. I don't remember who Beth is, but okay. They're the four main pledges. And on the night of the initiation, Dwight departs for a business trip, which we'll get to it. But he is brutally stabbed outside of his car with a hand rake. That's what it's called, before being decapitated. And the murderer leaves in Dwight's car with his corpse in the trunk. Just before Kelly and the other pleasures arrive at the department store, the night watchman is murdered while doing rounds, and Beth decides to quit.
And we never get to see him naked, and he's actually kind of hot.
He is kind of hot, and we do never get to see him naked. It's very unfortunate, because we see titties and, you know, bush, so, but whatever. This was not made for us, Pickens. It's fine. This leaves because Beth decided to quit. This leaves Kelly, Marsha, and Allison alone, and the three split up, and Kelly heads to the lounge upstairs to retrieve one of the uniforms from the night watch. Meanwhile, Megan, who's the head sorority sister, lets co-eds Chad, Ralph, and Andy break into the store to scare the pledges. And shortly after, Andy is killed with a hatchet, and Megan is shot to death with a bow and arrow. And then Chad and Ralph successfully scare Kelly and Marsha by hiding in a dressing room. And after uniting with Allison, all five attempt to leave the store, but are now locked inside. Meanwhile, back at the campus, Peter and his colleague Heidi come across newspaper clippings detailing the fire that Kelly describes in her dreams. The article reveals that the burning man's identity is Jason Randall, who was a floor manager at the Fairchild department store, who was at one time married to Frances Vera Miles. Peter suspects that Jason is in fact Kelly's biological father, and that her nightmare is a memory of him being burned in an altercation with Francis's lover, Dwight, who subsequently raised Kelly as his own daughter. A recent article on the inmates' revolt at the hospital reveals that Jason is a groundskeeper on there, and he's among the prisoners who have escaped. Peter then drives to the Fairchild's residence to notify Francis of his discoveries. Meanwhile, back at the mall, Allison and Chad wander around the store together. While Chad is in the bathroom, Allison discovers the body of the night watchman, followed by Chad's corpse in a bathroom stall, and a traumatized Allison locates Kelly, who instructs her to hide at the security desk on the ground floor. Kelly enters the bathroom, sees Chad's body, as well as her name written in blood on the mirror. Meanwhile, Allison at the security desk is brutally stabbed to death. Unfortunate. By Hunter Tylo. So then Ralph and Marsha, because this whole thing is Marsha is a virgin throughout the whole movie, they have sex in a retail display bed before Ralph is shot dead with the harpoon gun, and Marsha flees through the store and is met by Kelly. They seek safety inside of a freight elevator, but is soon infiltrated by the killer, who drags Marsha into the elevator shaft. RIP Marsha, we love you. Kelly escapes and flees into the store's boiler room, where she encounters Jason, who she assumes to be the killer, just because maybe he looks weird. He's burned. That's unfortunate, but okay. He pursues her.
Jason.
His name's Jason. Yes, you're right. Girl, what did I say? Oh my God. he pursues her to the roof, where she bludgeons him with a pipe, causing him to fall to the ground below. And then Peter and Francis arrive at the store, and they find Jason lying on the ground, clinging to life. Inside, Peter sees whom he believes to be Kelly standing in the foyer of the store, and he embraces her before she then stabs him in the stomach.
Oh, that's right. He isn't. Yeah, he does show back up.
I guess he does, but
yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
No. Kelly then stumbles upon the scene, and she is faced with a reflection of herself, her disturbed twin sister Terry, who has been institutionalized since childhood when Frances left her mother and married Dwight. Of whom Kelly has no memory of. So just as Terry is about to murder Kelly, she is shot to death by Francis, and the film ends as a wounded Peter is taken away in an ambulance while Kelly stares at her mother in disbelief. And then that's the end of the film, pretty much. And
oh
that is
gosh.
The plot of the initiation.
Yeah. When you actually read it out loud, it actually, you do realize, like, oh my gosh, so much does actually happen in this movie.
It's so much. Like, there's so much going on. Like, oh my God. Like, because you do have these, like, A and B plots and all that. And not saying that
this
doesn't
one has
necessarily happen.
A, B, C, all the way down to Z almost.
Oh my God. Yes. It's crazy. But yeah, there's a whole lot going on. It's the twist of the end where it is the killer twin. And that's who has been behind this whole thing, because I guess we really would have thought it was like the burned up Jason guy. Like, we just thought it was him.
Yeah,
I guess
he's the red herring, but then when you watch it makes so much sense, because there's like a lot of mirrors and like reflections and just all that stuff.
Yeah, no, totally. And just a lot of that kind of thing going on. And yeah, it's very interesting. I have heard this kind of compared. I don't know if you would compare it as well. There's a little bit of a comparison to Happy Birthday to Me. Thoughts?
Oh, feelings? Yeah, absolutely. I will say, though, this does make more sense than Happy Birthday to Me, because yes. Happy Birthday to Me works is every time I watch it, I always forget who the killer is, because right. It makes zero sense. And I'm like, oh, right. It is that person. And of course, because it makes zero sense.
Yeah, absolutely. There's just a lot going on in Happy Birthday to Me. It's still kind of fun, but like, yeah, there's a lot going on there too. Also, I already talked about this with you over Instagram chat, but watched Thanksgiving. This it was on Netflix, and fantastic film, pretty decent.
I do need to rewatch it because I took mushrooms and went to go see it.
Oh.
And 10 out of 10 would not recommend. let's just say it got a little too real sometimes, but I really like the Scream aspect of it. It felt more like a 90s Scream movie than like the newer Scream movies. And I really dug it. This is an Eli Roth doing good. We do good job, Eli Roth, this one.
Yes, because listen, I
when
was
he
just
does bad, he does bad. But when he does good, he does really good.
No, he did. Yeah, because this is like one of the only Eli Roth movies I can even say, like, yes, you should see this, because it's ridiculous. I only say that because there is like a literal like homage to Happy Birthday to Me, like seriously, in Thanksgiving. So it's just very fun to see him pull those references for sure.
And they're making a sequel, so I'm super excited.
I'm super excited too. I think I would be interested. Again, don't think I want to see it in theaters because Spyglass is being shady, but you know, I would stream it somewhere, you know, for whatever. So cool. Not until they
I'm just glad I finally have a Thanksgiving movie to watch. You know, we really don't have a lot of them.
I know. I mean, we all love Blood Rage, obviously, but like, you know.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Speaking of another Oscar, speaking of another Oscar winning performance. Oh my gosh.
Truly, like Louise Lasser, like, come on now. Like, amazing. Like
her sitting in front of the open refrigerator, eating the mashed potatoes, drinking a bottle of wine. It's just, oh my gosh, it's iconic.
Oh, don't worry. We're going to cover it. It's all good. I have to at some point. But yeah. So, I mean, like, but that's the plot of the movie, pretty much. Pretty straightforward. Not really even that straightforward, but that's what it is. Now, what I kind of wonder from you, Pickens, is from my beautiful dramatic reading, do you have any particular like favorite scenes of this movie that you like?
Yeah, like I pretty much watch the very beginning, and then like I honestly fast forward through all the dream stuff because there are very boring long scenes, and then I go right to the mall. So really the beginning up to her supposed dad's death, and then all the mall stuff. And then I kind of just skip out the middle because it's kind of the same conversations over and over again. I'm having these dreams. Mirrors scare me. Oh my God, let's talk about the psychology of dreams. And it's like, I don't care. Let's get to the killing.
I know. I'll also throw in that I do like their discovery stuff. Like I like when Heidi with her cute glasses and everything has done all this research. I do like that part because it like makes them do something. But as you stated already, it is kind of boring that they're doing this like fucking dream shit. I'm just like, okay, cool. I guess like, nah, all right. Like, you know, but, because I do think like the slasher stuff in the mall is very fun as well. I will also say I do kind of like the party scene in this movie. It's not as good as some of the other party scenes we've had, but this one is kind of fun.
It is. I actually will say like, because I think it is because this one is a little different from the other. There is a lot of character development in this movie. So you do like have fun with the characters and you do like kind of like them. So it just,
I can agree with that. I do think there's a little bit of that. I like her, like she has this like little leather like outfit going on at this party. For some
her
reason, the graduate
and this her outfits are on point in this movie. I will say she looks incredible.
She does look so good. Oh my God, I love it. But yeah, so it's like that. What I was saying earlier about Return of the Living Dead, which is just funny because Clue Gulager is in this movie. Also, that movie did not exist at this time. So I just think it's kind of interesting. But for some reason, Marsha is dressed. I don't know who she's dressed up as. She literally looks like, okay, she doesn't look exactly like her because they don't look the same. But she looks like trash from Return of the Living Dead. And I don't know why.
Oh, like, she does.
With like the red hair and like just her outfit. I'm like, what were we doing here? Like, what is this? Like, I don't know, man. They really did, because I was like, because she's wearing a wig. So I'm just like, I just think it's like so funny. I'm just like, what's going on over there? Also, the guy that she's with is dressed up as a literal penis. So that's always fun.
Well, it's because he's a dick.
Yeah, he's a dick. There you go. Yeah, it's just like so fucking weird. but yeah, I mean, like, I'm trying to think of if I have any particular scenes that are like stand out to me. Like I said, I think like the discovery of everything is always a really interesting one. And also I like a lot of the mall stuff. I feel like the mall stuff is just like where I kind of get into.
Yeah. Especially like when Allison's like roller skating, like down the hall.
Yeah.
Just like, kind, you know, and there are like actually like really creepy shots, like in the dark, mm-hmm. like department store rooms and everything. It's actually it does get a little creepy like during that part.
Yeah, no, totally. Like I would absolutely agree with that. And then also, like, even though yes, the twist is kind of weird as hell, I like the twist. Like, I think it is that perfect soap opera twist. Like, yes, of course she had an evil sister she knew nothing about and has been killing everyone this whole time. Like, obviously. Malignant who? Like, you know, it's all good. Like, it's
oh
just...
Oh my God, that movie is so good. I love it. Malignant.
It is so good. I watched that on HBO when it first came out, and that shit was bomb. Go watch Malignant, please. Oh, it's so good.
Love it because it's stupid and it knows it's stupid and it celebrates being stupid.
Yeah, it's great. When she falls through the roof or whatever.
Oh my gosh. Her. The kung fu of it all, the love letter to Giallo. It's just,
Yeah. It's a fun time. It's enjoyable. Yeah, for sure. But this is not a Malignant podcast, but listen, you know. But yeah, no, I do think like those are kind of those scenes that I really like and are just enjoyable, if anything. Like, I do think like I think this movie shines with like being able to look pretty decent on a low budget. Like, I think it looks nice. Like, even you watching it on Tubi, like, it's only ever a 2K. I think that's what you have. And we can talk a little bit about the special features on your Blu-ray. But like, you know, even when you can get it for free, like, it still looks pretty decent. And I really like that. And there are some cool shots in it as well. But do you want to talk a little bit about, do you have anything to say about your Arrow release Blu-ray that you want anybody to know about or whatever?
First of all, I was just so I was shocked when it like was announced. Like, but it makes sense because I'm like, oh yeah, basically everything Arrow puts out is just great. The transfer is beautiful, really, really good. Special feature, I haven't really delved too much into special features yet. It's kind of just like some interviews basically. So it's just, and no one like major, like I think it's God, one of the guys does it and one of the actresses, but it's not none of them major, so it's just kind of and then there's like a commentary that's like by it's like not even by anyone from the movie, like they're like a podcast or they're like fans of the movie, so it's a fan commentary, which I like to hear what I have to say about the movie. I don't need other people. You know, no one else wants to hear me talk about it over a movie, right? So, but the transfer is great. Awesome. Love it.
Yeah, I love that for you. Yeah, totally. Like, Yeah, and I think if anything, I don't actually have an Arrow release, but I need to work on getting one. Did you get it They're straight from it. Arrow?
I believe I did. If not, it was at some DVD store, but I'm pretty sure I did buy it from Arrow because they were doing a sale and I like racked up basically. But you should definitely get an Arrow release. They are worth the money in my opinion because mm-hmm. they're like the modern day Anchor Bay. Like they give you the features, mama.
Yeah, that's good. I like that for sure. Also fun little thing, because we already talked about a few things of this, but Marilyn Kagan, who plays Marcia in this movie, unfortunately has since passed away. So very sad. But she actually went on to have a top-rated radio show on KFI in Los Angeles. She became a licensed clinical social worker, and she took calls from her listeners and answered their therapeutic questions. So Marcia ended up doing good in the end. So there you
That's
go.
Awesome. Good for her. She is like one of my favorite characters. And I remember when I first watched it, I was like, no, don't kill Marcia. Cause you thought she was going to make it to the end. She was kind of right there with her. And then mm-hmm. she gets dragged off. I'm like, damn it.
Yeah. I think I was also wondering, like, why is it you liked Marcia all this, you know, like, why was it you liked her? But like, no, I completely get it.
Yeah, she's like a little bit of an underdog because, I mean, let's face it, Kelly Fairchild's beautiful. She's gorgeous. Mm-hmm. She's kind of like that cool girl. She's a little nerdy. She has a tragic backstory, which we come to mm-hmm. find out. There's a reason why she's a virgin. She's not technically a virgin because she was molested as a child. Which is also very heavy for a slasher
movie. Yeah, that came out of nowhere in a way. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, she just wants some love. She just has ambitions. She wants to get her college degree. God damn it. And then it was cut short. Literally.
I know. Yeah. I think that's what's really interesting about the character of Marcia is like she just felt very like just normal because, as you said, Kelly is so well, she comes from privilege and she's like rich, obviously.
Rich. Oh, that house. I want to live in that house so bad.
I understand. Like, it's nice. Like, just amazing. But like, yeah, no, I rich. She's, you know, beautiful, of course. She's Daphne Zuniga. Hunter Tylo, also very attractive, like all of this. So I think a lot of folks, maybe they just kind of latch on with Marcia because she's just like, you know, nice, bubbly, like she's fun. It did come out of nowhere where she talks about like her child sexual trauma. And that's just like really kind of out of left field in a weird way.
It really kind of is.
Yeah. But it kind of then makes it interesting of like, she's kind of virgin shamed in a way through the movie. And it's like, well, maybe she didn't ever want to say anything. And, you know, I don't know. It's just like this whole thing of like, maybe there's a reason you shouldn't just like do that. And honestly, again, that goes back to, you know, and how sororities will do that.
Kudos to the writers, though, for making her boyfriend like actually like a sympathetic person. Like he's mm-hmm. like, oh, I mean, they end up having sex, but like at least it's right. like, you know, he's like, I'm going to show you good consensual sex. Yay. We like that. We like that. Cause it could have gone in a more, it was the 80s. They could have gone in much different directions.
I agree. For sure. I mean, I don't know if there's much to break down with these characters, but I mean, maybe a little bit. You know, do you have any thoughts on like Kelly Fairchild, except that she's just beautiful, I guess? Like, do you have anything to kind of talk with her about?
She's beautiful. She's rich. I will be completely honest. Daphne is a little one note kind of. Mm-hmm. She's a little like above it in a way. I don't know. I think she kind of wasn't the best performance in the world. Yeah. And maybe that's also why I like Marcia, because Marcia gives, I think, really honestly, she and Megan, I think, are the only two that actually give a really good performance.
True. The other,
I'll always never forget the insane asylum nurse is probably one of the worst actresses I've ever seen in a movie.
Oh God. Why is that? Why do we say that?
She's like, what are you doing in there? Get out of here. Oh my, you know,
oh,
just,
yeah.
Yeah.
Fair. Very fair. Yeah. And you know, if anything, like Yeah, no, I totally can understand what you're saying, because there's only so much in terms of that. And like you even said, like Peter is like kind of a throwaway. Like he comes back in the end, of course, but like you're just like, okay, teacher, I guess. Like not even teacher, but like he's a grad assistant.
Weird, so
he
is in a weird love interest.
It is kind of weird because I'm just like, he is like at least a graduate student, I guess, but I'm just like, and then also we go back to him having a pseudo psychology. It's not real. That's not real. It's like, you can't get a parapsychology degree. Like that's not real science. Like, I'm sorry. Like whatever. It's anyway, but yeah. So I think we talked a little bit earlier about it. So I do think there are some good things in this film. I think we may have touched on it a little bit, but what do you think, what do you have like negatives of this movie? Like, what do you think maybe doesn't work in the film?
I mean, as I said, like definitely like the dream stuff. I think it's just, it doesn't necessarily need to leave the movie, but it could have been like one or two scenes. And I feel like it's like a good 15 minute portion of the movie.
Right.
And it's kind of the same thing over and over again. She's having the dreams. She's talking about them. They're analyzing it. The only one time it gets interesting is when she goes under hypnosis and like they're trying to get her out of it. And they're like, Kelly Fairchild, wake up. Kelly Fairchild, wake up. And her mother just goes, Randall, it's Kelly Randall.
You know, yeah, just, right.
So yeah, that doesn't work. And also, I mean, as much as I love the mall, as much as we love the mall scenes, the mall scene, it is the dumbest reason. Like so she's her dad owns the building. It's the Fairchild Mall, whatever. So they could have done so many other things besides let's steal the Nightman's clothes. They could have been like, you gotta steal something, or you gotta, you know, vandalize. I don't know. They could have had way more fun with it. And they just chose the most ridiculous, convoluted reason to go into the mall, which again, and we said this earlier, this thing is gigantic. It is a convention center.
It is.
One night man, one guy. That's it. That's all we need, you know? Meh.
Right, exactly. Like it's just like, oh, it's so weird how that works. But yeah, no, I do think like this movie, in terms of what maybe doesn't work, I think the writing could have been better in terms of this. The script is a little lacking for sure. And I think like performance wise, I think Marsha does a good job. And I guess Vera Miles and Clue Gulager do a pretty decent job. However, I feel like you could definitely tell that Vera Miles could give a fuck less about this. But
every time I watch that scene, it's like, I think she's just sitting at the table by herself pouring her scotch.
Yes.
I'm just convinced that was just improvised. I'm just convinced she was just like, I'm in this fucking movie.
God. No, totally. Like, yeah, because some of the other acting maybe wasn't like the best. But again, I think like there is that kind of like there's the negatives there. Like I said, with the positives, which we already kind of talked about anyway. And if you wanted to add on, but like, I think the positives of it are that it does look pretty decent in terms of cinematography. The just use of this in general of like having this kind of weird soap opera thing is kind of unique in a weird way. And I will always say that with this movie is that it may not be the best film in the world. However, it is not, it's a unique movie. It's interesting.
It is unique. If anything. One of the big unique things that always caught my attention on it. Have you ever seen The Prowler?
Yes. Oh, no, I haven't. I thought you said The Mutilator. I thought you were thinking of that.
Oh, no, not The Mutilator, The Prowler. So, you know, in this movie, like whenever somebody like the blood is like shiny, shiny blood. The only other movie I've ever seen that done is also The Prowler. There's scenes in The Prowler where like this blood's shiny like that. It's a weird thing.
Yeah.
The Vaseline on the camera or something. Like
yeah. That. Totally. Right. I need to find out where The Prowler Howler is. I need to find out where that's streaming because I have not seen it.
Oh, yeah. I own it. Big shocker. It's honestly some of Tom Savini's best makeup work, in my opinion.
Oh, bitch, it's on Tubi and Shudder. Oh, well, look at that.
Oh, watch it. It is seriously. It's really that's another real. That's a really good one.
Yeah, I'm going to watch it because I have not seen it. So maybe I really need to actually pull up on that. Okay, I'm going to pull up on it. Also, a little side note, fucking the Mutilator, like that is where you're from, like near where you're, not completely, but kind of sort of. That is a fucking ride too. My God.
Oh, yeah. And like, they're making a sequel. They're doing it, baby.
They want to do it, man.
One of my exes, he is like friends with the director, actually. And like,
of course he is.
A huge Mutilator fan, and he actually hosted a screening of it like at the like where it was filmed. Nice. And I don't know if he's how involved he is in it, but I think he encouraged him to get the sequel started or something.
Yeah, that's so funny how he would have been interested in that movie. Like, that's so odd in a way, but okay, I'll buy it.
Oh, and my dad went to high school with one of the guys in the movie. He has a weird name, but yeah, my dad went to high school with him.
Oh, cute. Love that. Yeah. And it was just like, so, and in a way, like, it's funny that like you say like the Prowler and like we bring up like Mutilator and stuff, because if I'm not mistaken, the Prowler was also shot like on location somewhere, wasn't it? Like, it was like,
it's,
I don't remember
it's
exactly.
It definitely is in New England, because it's the whole thing. It's actually like a very like, it's a more mature slasher movie. I know it's like these college students are doing this like dance. Mm-hmm. They're hosting a dance, and the last time
it was done in New Jersey. So okay, that's
yeah,
fair.
New Jersey. Yeah. So, but it's really good actually. It's one of my. It's real. It's another like not really well known or like kind of more deep cut, but it's really mm-hmm. it's really good.
No, totally. And I think that kind of comes back to like the initiation, because this movie does, it was definitely shot on location in Texas, so like, you know, that kind of works with that. But yeah, I think if anything, like, yeah, the positives of this movie, I was thinking of this, what did I say in Letterboxd? I will bring up my Letterboxd real quick. I think I mentioned this on the last the sorority episode, but I think what I said is, yeah, this is so early 80s and I really enjoyed myself with it. The effects, the cheesy music, and the twists. Like, I definitely think that this movie, if anything, is something where if you are interested in 80s horror in particular, it's a movie that's at least worth checking out. And it is kind of an interesting, it's an interesting departure. It's something that, you know, you don't get to, it's something that I just think is underseen and a little underrated. I can't say it's like top flight or anything like that, but I would say I enjoyed myself generally. And yeah, I just think like, I'm glad that you were able to let me, you know, experience this and turn me on to it. If anything, I really like that, because yeah, I think this movie is like, worth a, it's a cheesy 80s horror movie, but I'm okay with it being a cheesy 80s horror movie,
honestly. Yes, I'm a big, I mean, it's one of the, it's, if I mean, I don't recommend it to everyone. That if someone says like, I love horror movies, it's not my first one to recommend, but like if mm-hmm. I find out they love slasher movies or 80s yeah. movies, I'm like, this is one you should check out, you know. That's what I always say, like, you know, when you get past the Friday the 13th to the Nightmare on Elm Streets, you know, you gotta get dig down a little deeper, you find some gems.
You do. I absolutely believe that. And I think, yeah, the initiation is definitely one of those. I also think like, yeah, like the Mutilators are kind of another one that's sort of like that too. And, you know, I just like that also in a way, like we're able to have this kind of, it's so cool that we can talk about these movies from a bygone era, if anything. I don't think we'll ever really get back to that, unfortunately, which is very sad. But I do think, like, in a weird way, I feel like 80s horror, am I going on record and saying this, but like, I don't know, like, it's kind of one of my favorite parts of horror. Like, I just think there was a lot of cool shit going on.
I don't think that's a hot take at all. I think it's like, I mean there's a reason why we are talking about it still, and like,
yeah.
You know, that's why, like, I mean, like, watch anything nowadays. There's so many references to it. You know, yeah. Like, the synth soundtrack is coming back into style. And, like, you know, just you can just see homages all over the place to it. It's just, yeah. There's something about that time period. You know, the 80s is still, you know, it's still, there's still stuff being made about it to this day, you know? And maybe because it was like, you know, kind of original, and it was like kind of like a, hey, we're throwing stuff and seeing what sticks. Again, Hollywood producers, just start doing cocaine again, please. Can we just the
Just a little
Hollywood
bit.
industry, just a little bit, you know, not a concern. Just go get one of Sarah Michelle Gellar's you know, crucifixes
Yes,
and just do
the
that amount,
cross.
and then just start writing some scripts and just and producers join in so you'll throw money at it and then just let it happen.
Yeah, because I just feel like, because we're wrapping up a little bit as well, but like, because there's not much else to talk about this movie with, you should go fucking watch it. But like, so it is on like Tubi pretty easily. It shows up different places. I maybe would not like rent it for money, really, but like if you find it for free, go ahead. Like, I would
Watch it
watch it
for
that way.
free, and if you like it, then you know, check out the Arrow Blu-ray. That's my recommendation.
Sure, yeah. I think you can find it on YouTube pretty easy, so that's cool too. But yeah, I think back to 80s horror thing or whatever. Like, I don't know. I just think like it's me waxing poetic at this point about it. But like, I just think like in this genre, I think that time, for as much bullshit as there kind of was, I guess, I kind of liked the fact that there was that bullshit. Like, you could have all of this stuff, and it was kind of cool. And like there was just so much there to kind of look for and to kind of make horror about, if anything.
Right. Yeah. I also think it's just, I think they also are just were allowed to be stupid and dumb. And like, you know, because I think people were less cynical, probably. I think they were less, people got cynical in the 90s. I think, you know, people were
Sure.
just, they just enjoyed things, you know, and they just like, you know, and it was fun. Because now, you know, every, like, even though, like, I think we are in another, like, kind of a new, like, golden or silver age of horror. There's so many layers of like, you know, you have to pull back the layers of the bullshit and all the stuff. And just like, you know, movies just need to be dumb again. And not like dumb, it's like in Transformers dumb, it's just dumb. I don't know. I don't know what I'm saying.
No, I think I get what you're saying, because what it is that I think in the 80s, yes, I think maybe some people were still cynical, and I think people got more cynical in the 90s with Gen X and all. And I still love the 90s for some horror as well, but like, whatever. But
It's
80s just
growing
had,
on me. It's
it
growing on
is. I
me.
get it. I do like some 90s horror. It's pretty good. But like the 80s horror, I just think there was a lot going on. There was a lot of people just trying their best or just trying their hand at stuff, which was really cool. And I just think there was a lot of variety going on as well, which was really interesting as too. And I think like, we just don't have that as much now anymore. It's always about like, what can we remake? What can we like adapt from something, or like, which has always happened really, but like,
Oh yeah, but it's happening a lot more now. Like, and I think it's just more obvious. Like it's just coming up more and more and more. And it's just, okay, original, please.
Would you want, here's the question. Would you want a remake of The Initiation?
I mean, I'm at this point, like, you know, if you asked me like maybe 10 years ago, I would have been like, absolutely not. This is my child. But you know, at this point, I'm like, if you're going to remake it, yes, but like make it interesting. Like, you know, fix, you should remake it to fix the problems of the original. You should, you know, maybe add like a fun new element. Like, I honestly think, you know, they could play with the twin thing a little bit more. You know, they could like really like, you know, keep you guessing like, is she crazy? Is it a twin? Is like, you know, like show her killing people and like, you know, like have like this whole like, I can't trust you aspect to it. I think it'd be interesting, you know, and get more into the politics of sorority and Greek life and show the nightman naked. I want to see some dong.
I know we need more dong in horror movies, like truly and utterly.
We just need more dong in movies.
I agree, because obviously equal opportunity, like I just want it. Like, sorry, but
Yeah,
it's
it's like we've
just
seen boobs, we've seen butts. Let's see some
it's
dicks.
fine. Exactly. But yeah, I just think like nowadays, like we're just only so many things are working for me. And that's whatever, but Yeah. Have you ever watched, have you seen the In Search of Darkness documentaries ever at all?
Yes, I mean, as much as I can, because they're like, what, 3 hours? It's
Oh
but
my God,
they
they're so
are
long.
they're so long. They're really good. I love those a lot. I love the poster art. There's
Yeah.
actually also there's a YouTube channel I just discovered called Horror Timelines, and he's actually
Oh,
doing
yeah.
something calling the 80s project, and he's literally watching as many 80, like he's basically gonna he takes a year and he watches every single horror movie released in that year, which I don't know how, like, I commend that man. That is incredible. And
Right.
he's like reviewed some movies I didn't even know existed, and they seem really
Yeah.
cool, and I want to check them out.
Yeah, check out Horror Timelines. He's really cool. I have not like spoke to him or anything, but I do like some of his episodes. And yeah, he talks about like these so some of the things he does, he's doing this 80s project, I guess, but he also does like some really fun like movies where they were like aping off of like Nightmare on Elm Street and like Halloween, like these kind of knockoffs. And I just think yeah, he has a really interesting kind of thing to him. And he's also kind of a bit attractive, which I like as well.
He is he is really cute.
And he just like talks about some deep cuts. He's got some good deep cuts where some of
He
them are
really
bad
does.
movies, but like there's some fun ones in there for sure. So yeah, if you don't want to just, and we love, of course, Dead Meat and like the big horror channels and all that, don't get me wrong, but like, you know, check out Horror Timelines too. There's some good shit going down. Yeah, for sure. But I think that kind of brings us to an end to this episode of ours about the initiation. But Pickens, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show, talking about this little 80s gem and talking about it and just appreciating it for what it is. And you know, this is real 80s and not just like fucking fake ass 80s that we have nowadays. So
Well, I
like,
mean, everything's going to be fake SAD style because it doesn't exist anymore.
oh, I know. But they can't even like do it more realistically, you know? So I'm just like, ugh. Like,
That's true.
okay.
Like, I thought Stranger Things season one did such a good job. And then the more the seasons progress, it was like more neon, more synthy. Oh my gosh. It was like, okay, now
Yeah.
it's like a little bit of a parody of itself.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if you watched it or not. Did you watch that new Goosebumps show on Hulu and Disney Plus at all?
No, there's just too many streaming services and too many things.
Oh, I get it.
And
Because
also,
listen.
I just saw the live action movie that came out a few years ago, and it was fun, but it was also like, oh.
Yeah. So that one partly takes place in the 90s and then partly takes place in present day. And I don't think I've said this on mic at all yet, but I did not like that show at all. Really didn't care for it. I don't really know what they were going for. It was also produced by the same guy who did that movie. So like, you know, it
Yeah,
just was
just I
meh.
don't know. Just the first show had it right. They just adapt the books. Just, do that and just I don't know.
They didn't, yeah. I don't think you need to check it out. Like, don't worry. Like, it's
Just
fine.
keep reading the books. They're fine.
Keep reading the books, keep trying to watch the show. Don't watch the new show. I don't, and it's getting a second season, and okay, fine. What the hell do I know? But
I just want to rant about television for just one quick second.
totally fine.
What I hate about new TV nowadays is that they're like 8 to 10 episodes long, but it takes like 2 years to get a season two, and then usually they cancel it after season two. And it just that's been driving me up a wall lately. Like if I find a show I really like, I'm like, oh, I love this, and then it ends. Like Severance, I loved it, and they ends on this cliffhanger, and then they finally announce like season two is coming 2025. I'm like, God fucking damn it! I know there is some behind the scenes drama. Like apparently the producers got into a fight; they don't like each other anymore. But apparently they finally are filming again. But now I'm like, oh my God, it's exhausting. I'm tired. I'm tired.
Yeah, imagine how tired we are, you know? Oh my God, but yeah. So, but I'm glad to have talked about this little movie. I think it's like a fun little 80s movie that's super cheesy and stupid, and it's kind of fun. And yeah, just go fucking watch it. Also, you need to watch Phantom of the Mall, Eric's Revenge. Go watch that.
I'm definitely going to check that out because, yeah, seriously, I'm just a slut for mall movies. What can I say?
Hell yeah. All right. But this brings us to our close. So, Pickens, if you want to, please plug your social media if you want people to find you.
Yeah. So you can find me. I'm on Instagram at Party Pickens, or, you know, you can, I'm kind of on TikTok occasionally, you know, you can find me there. And yeah, just, you know, come say hi. I'm pretty nice. You know, I had no idea who Jesse was. He followed me and then we started talking. So there you go. Shoot your shot.
Exactly. He'll probably, you know, he'll probably message you back. Like, it's all good. And, you know,
depends on if you're cute or not, you know.
And as always, you can follow the show on Instagram at Cult Cinema Circle and on Twitter, I will not call it X, at Cult Cinema Circle. You can also follow me on Letterboxd at Jesse, JesseKremp, all one word, to go see the movies I've logged and to go see what I think about movies or whatever the hell. Also, please rate, comment, subscribe on your podcatcher of choice, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify. Google Podcasts is actually going away, so don't worry about that one. Audible, damn, all that R. kind R. of fun stuff. I know, right? And also on YouTube. So if you want to do that as well, yeah, give me like 5 stars. 1 to 2 sentence review, gets people to know the show. Come talk to me, come email me, cultcinemacircle@gmail.com, whatever, you know, all that good stuff. So we'll talk a little bit about what I'm doing next week. So next week, I'm also celebrating a little bit of an anniversary for this film, and I'm going to be covering a little movie from 1989 called Teen Witch. Have you seen Teen Witch?
Yes. Oh, I love that movie.
Yeah, yeah. Teen Witch is super fun. So pretty much it's about a girl who's turned 16. She finds out she's a witch and hijinks ensue from there. It's a little bit of a musical, a little bit of like a coming of age movie. It is very decent. So please tune in next week where we will be covering that. That'll be super fun. But as always, y'all, thank you so much for listening to the Cult Cinema Circle podcast. And remember, Delta Rho Chi.
I never will die.
Delta Rho Chi. Never will die. Thanks so much. Take care.
Bye.